Life Roots, how are we? You guys doing well? Yeah. Hey, it's good to see you guys. And if you're joining us online, welcome. We're really glad that you're connecting with us. And hey, I want to just kind of encourage you for just a second, some things that have happened this week and that are going to happen this coming week. So far, since we've been able to go back into in-person services, we've had quite a few of you step up and volunteer in different ways. We've had a lot of new volunteers in all areas of our church, in our kids ministry, in our production worship team, online, in our guest experience team. There's more of you have jumped in and served, and I want to say, keep going. That's awesome. Like, that's a great way for you to be in the game and contribute to what God is doing here, and I want to encourage all of you to do that. So if you're not volunteering, you can jump on a team right now. You can go to this link on the screen, follow that form, fill it out. We'll contact you and help you get in the game so that you can be a part of the team here more. And I want to encourage you, more and more people, to do that. We even have people that are volunteering on digital platforms only. Even if you're not ready to be here physically yet, there's ways for you to serve online. So take that opportunity. Another thing that I want to encourage you about, which goes to the generosity of our church and us wanting to serve, because of the spikes that have happened across the country with COVID, our medical workers are feeling the pain again. So we want to do anything that we can to encourage and take care of them. So this week, and then also probably into next week also, this week, we are catering food trucks for hospital workers here in our communities. We just want to say, hey, who doesn't love food trucks, by the way? So if we can just pay for your food, everyone that works at the hospitals, if we can just pay for your food for a while, if that gives you a break, then we want to do that. We also want to take some gift baskets. We've got gift baskets lined up to the different healthcare workers that are doing the different drive-through testings around our community, just to say thank you, just to say we got your back. And on top of that, we also want to write encouraging notes. So what I want to challenge you to do, and I want to ask our entire church to do this, is take some time today, if you already haven't, we know that some of you already have, take some time today and write a handwritten note of encouragement to our healthcare workers here in our communities, just telling them, hey, we got your back, we know that you're there, we see what you're doing, we love you, and maybe here's your favorite verse, some kind of encouragement letter just to give them life. Bring that back today, drop it off today, because we're going to deliver them tomorrow. There's a little box right outside the front doors by our offices that you can just drop those notes in there, and then we will deliver those this week, because encouraging words matter. Like, we know that words are powerful, are they not? I mean, this is a lesson that we are continuing to try to teach our kids. We want them to understand the impact that their words have. I feel like I'm constantly saying to my kids, hey, are your words building people up, or are they what? Tearing down. Then y'all are with me, right? Are they tearing people down? Because words are powerful. Words can be incredibly constructive, or they can just burn stuff down. And this is a lesson that's not just for kids. Adults need to hear this just as bad. I need to be reminded that my words have power, that they could be incredibly encouraging to someone, or they could be discouraging. My words could bless someone, or they could actually hurt them. The power of words is a school that you and I will never graduate from. We constantly need to be learning that lesson. Here's a point. Notice this. This shows how powerful words are. God created the universe through his words. He didn't make all things with his hands. That's not what he did. He made all things with his words. John 1 talks about Jesus and describes Jesus as the Word, a capital W. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. All things were created through him. So whether it's you, me, or anybody else, when we speak, it's a big deal. When God is the one that speaks, then, if words are that powerful, we probably should listen, shouldn't we? Man, throughout the book of John, Jesus makes these seven bold and controversial statements and shows how powerful words are. I mean, these statements were about how he is God and what that means for you and I. He says that, so far we've heard this, he says that I'm the bread of life, I'm the light of the world, I'm the gate for the sheep, I'm the resurrection and the life. And when you hear those at first, it kind of sounds a little weird though, doesn't it? Like, what's that mean? But when you realize what he's actually saying, it's an incredible gift to you and to me. These seven statements changed the world. Whether we want to admit it or not, these seven statements have altered the course of history, and they can change your life too if you let them. So let's look at another one. Let me ask you this. Have you seen any of those shows online or on TV before about when animals attack? You know, like, hey, you know, one of those shows that says, you know, I survived, or I shouldn't be alive, or the very creative title, When Animals Attack. You know what shows I'm talking about, right? Well, I'm weird because I love watching those shows. I love it. Like, first of all, I want to hear the stories, and if there's any footage, I want to see the footage. And you know what? I think it's educational because I want to be prepared. I want to know what to do if I ever come face to face with a great white shark. If that happens, I want to know what to do. I think the tactic is pray and swim, but you're out of luck at that point. But seriously, I want to be prepared to know what to do. And the same blank, judgmental look that many of you are making right now is the same look that Kelly gives me. Like, she makes fun of me about this, but I don't care. I love it. I want to know what to do. Disclaimer, though, I will say this. Whenever you see one of those instances where a guy voluntarily sticks his head in the mouth of a lion or starts swimming around with alligators just to show off, if that's the case, I'm kind of rooting for the animal. Like, I kind of am. Like, if you do that on your own, bro, you got whatever's coming to you. You know what some of the most famous last words are? Hey, watch this. If you say that, you got whatever's coming for you. I got no mercy for you at that point. But seriously, what happens? Like, if you run into a moose or a bear or a mountain lion on a hike, what do? What happens if you face a pack of wolves? I mean, we just voted wolves back into our state. We literally voted wolves into the state of Colorado. What would you do if you faced a pack of wolves? Jesus talked about facing wolves. And not actual wolves, but he uses it as an illustration for something that every single one of us is going to face at some point. So here's the context that brought all this up. The more that Jesus interacted with people, the more he talked with people, the more he engaged with people, the more he did miraculous things like heal people or hold Thanksgiving for 5,000 plus people with no groceries, the more he revealed himself to other people, the more he showed that he was God, the more pushback he got. And the more confusion that he got also, which seems kind of weird, because why would people question that Jesus was God after they saw him do all this crazy, cool stuff? Why would they question him? But that same question is still happening today. People still question who Jesus is. They're still not sure. So that's why Jesus makes these seven bold statements in John to clear some of that up. Well, on one particular day, Jesus is walking along and he sees this guy that's blind. And this guy's been blind since birth. So Jesus stops and he heals this guy because that was Jesus' MO. He just had this insane amount of compassion for people. And he heals this guy and the guy leaves. And all of a sudden, these neighbors of this guy start coming around and they start asking questions. If a guy that has been blind from birth is suddenly healed and has 20/20 vision, that's going to attract some attention, isn't it? So his neighbors start coming around him. They start asking him all these questions. And they're like, hey, what happened? It's a fair question, don't you think? Hey, what happened? How were you healed? Who healed you? And the guy's like, well, I don't know. It was this Jesus guy. And they're like, great. Where did he go? I would want to know that too. If a guy that I had known my entire life that was blind, all of a sudden he's got 20/20 vision and says that he was healed by this guy, I'd want to go after that guy too. I'd want to go find out more about him also. And these neighbors, they also take this formerly blind guy, they take him to the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day. They want to see if this is legit. They want to see if this guy really was healed. And they want to hear from the Pharisees what they think about Jesus. Is this Jesus for real? So the Pharisees, though, they got to put on a little bit of a show. They start asking questions too. They're like, okay, who are you? Okay, what happened? You were healed, okay. How were you healed? He put mud in your eyes. What, okay. Who was it that healed you? Where did he go? They even ask him, what's your opinion about this guy that healed you? What's your opinion? People are still asking that question today. What's your opinion about Jesus? Like, what's your opinion? Do you think that Jesus was a great teacher that we all should probably learn some stuff from? Is that your opinion about Jesus? Or maybe that he was a great moral example, maybe the greatest moral example in history, but that's about it. Maybe he was a real guy. Yeah, he was real, but all the stuff that's been attributed to him, things that have been claimed that he did or happened to him, none of that's real. Or maybe he was a prophet of some sort. Or is your opinion that he's the Son of God? I mean, there's an endless list of opinions about who Jesus is and what he did. Endless list of opinions. In fact, I don't think you could talk to anybody today that doesn't have an opinion about Jesus, even if it's indifference. That's still an opinion. But here's the thing. Even though there's so many different opinions like the Pharisees were asking about, you and I can have an opinion about Jesus. But here's the thing. Our opinion about Jesus doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, we live in a culture, we live in a world that says that you can create your own truth. Meaning your opinion can actually become truth. Your opinion trumps fact. Logically, that makes no sense at all. None. There's no rational thought in that at all, that you can create your own truth. Let me give you an example. My opinion is that the Colts are the best franchise in the NFL. And I got to clap. This is awesome. Be careful. We're in enemy territory. That's my opinion. Most of you would vehemently disagree with me, right? You would say that, in your opinion, the Broncos are the best fan base and the best franchise in the NFL. Not the best team right now. The best franchise in the NFL. And that's fine. That's fine. That's your opinion. Bless your heart. Eventually, I'll convert you. But I'm kidding. Like, I want the Broncos to do well. I just want you to know that. Like, as your pastor, I love you. I want your team to do well on every Sunday, unless they're playing the Colts. But that's your opinion, right? We both have opinions. So here's my question. Which one is right? Which one's the truth? Your opinion or my opinion? The answer is neither, because they're opinions. That's all they are. You are entitled to your own opinion. You absolutely are entitled to your own opinion. But what you're not entitled to is your own truth. You're not entitled to your own truth, because truth is outside of us. It's outside of you and me. If we can control truth, if we can create it, if we can change it, then it's not truth. Truth has to be constant. It has to be solid. It's absolute. God's word, the Bible, does not deal in opinions. It deals in truth. So let's just put aside for just a second, let's put aside the endless opinions about Jesus, because Jesus really is one of three things. That's it. There's only three options for what and who Jesus really is. First option, he's a liar. He's a liar. He said that he was God. There's no gray area in that. There's no like, well, kind of, no, that's either true or a lie. He said that he has and is the truth. We'll get to that one next weekend. That's either true or a lie. Jesus is either a liar, or if he's not a liar, the second option, he's a lunatic. The stuff that Jesus said and did was considered crazy, blasphemous. His own family thought that he was crazy. At one point, his mom and his brothers and sisters try to go get him because Jesus is out teaching, and they think he's lost his mind. They think Jesus is crazy. And they're, Jesus, you're embarrassing yourself and you're embarrassing our family. They try to go get him. Still today, people think that Jesus is crazy. Things that he said and things that he did. Jesus convinced billions of people to follow him as the Son of God. I'm one of them. Billions of people. The only way you can convince billions of people to follow you as God is you're either a lunatic, or third option, he is Lord. He is God. He is the creator of the universe. He is truth. And if that's the case, he's Lord over all. That includes you and that includes me. So Jesus is one of those three things. He's either a liar, he's a lunatic, or he's Lord. There's no other option. And you got to decide which one you believe is true. Just like he said last week, he said, do you believe all of this? Which one is he? And the people that see this blind man that are healed, they're trying to figure this out. They're trying to figure out what's the real deal about Jesus. So they go to the Pharisees, the religious leaders, thinking they're going to help. And the Pharisees, they say that Jesus is a liar and he's a lunatic. And on top of that, they even say that he's demon-possessed. They say to everybody, hey, this guy Jesus, he's actually possessed. Stay away from him. He's got a demon. Why? Like, for the longest time, I had a hard time with this piece. I didn't understand this. This made me really question the Gospels and God's word at times. Like, wait, the religious leaders, why are they questioning Jesus? Why are they the ones that push back the hardest? Something's off here then. Because these guys knew the Bible inside and out. A lot of these guys, the Pharisees, they had the entire Old Testament memorized. We feel good about memorizing John 3:16. They memorized the whole Old Testament. They knew all of the prophecies about the Messiah that was coming. All of the messianic prophecies, they knew exactly what they were. And when Jesus comes, they push back on him. Why? That doesn't make any sense, because these guys are the ones that should have noticed who he was from the get-go. They should have sounded the alarm and said, the Messiah's here. Like, get this, the messianic prophecies, the odds of one person fulfilling those prophecies in the Old Testament is like 1 in 10 to the 17th power. It's some crazy number. And if you were here last Christmas Eve, I used this illustration. It would be like this. If you took the entire state of Texas, and you filled it with silver dollars 3 feet deep, and you took one of those silver dollars, painted it red, threw it somewhere out in the middle of the sticks in Texas, blindfolded your friend, told them they could walk in any direction they want, as far as they want, stop whenever they want, bend down, pick up one silver dollar, the odds of them picking up that one red silver dollar that you painted are the same odds of somebody fulfilling all the messianic prophecies in the Old Testament. And yet Jesus fulfilled every single one of them. They were recorded too. Everyone saw it happen. It wasn't like, well, did he kind of fulfill this one in Zechariah 9? No, it's very clear. There were witnesses. He kept fulfilling prophecy after prophecy. And this doesn't even include the prophecies about his crucifixion. And the Pharisees are the guys that should have noticed it first. They should have been the ones saying, hey guys, look, this guy, he got that one. He even fulfilled the ones that he, as an infant. He couldn't have faked this. This isn't a hoax. Here's the Messiah. They should have been the ones saying it, but they didn't. Why? And then the more you study it, the more you read the story, it clicked pretty quickly for me. The reason why these guys couldn't see Jesus for who he was, check that. The reason why they didn't want to see Jesus was because they were blinded by their own self-interest. That's all it was. These dudes were comfortable. Man, they liked the position of leadership that they were in. They were making some coin too. They're making some money. They loved the social status they had as the scribes and Pharisees and Sadducees, these different positions. They loved the social status. They loved being recognized on the street when people would walk up to them and say, oh, you're so-and-so. You know, that's dangerous for me today. It would be the equivalent of me seeing one of you in the store and you said, oh, Matt, I love that sermon. Thank you so much. That's encouraging to me. What I got to do is, and thank you for that, what I got to do is guard my heart and not take that in and start possessing that. That's what these guys did. They loved to hear that applause. They craved it. They loved the social privileges and perks they got from being the social and religious leaders. And Jesus' presence and his message threatened all of that. Whenever someone's comfort, lifestyle, or idol, and religion can become an idol very quickly, when any of those things are threatened, what do people do? What do people do? They lash out. They lash out, right? I mean, we see this on a daily basis today. Whenever someone's comfort or lifestyle or opinion or idol is threatened, we immediately move to discredit it. We get rid of the threat. A smear campaign starts it off first. Then we go on a verbal assault. This is the reason why the cancel culture in our day has become weaponized so quickly. If I disagree with someone, if someone threatens my opinion, if someone threatens my lifestyle or my comfort or my idol, then I need to get rid of them. They're a threat. They're canceled. That person or that group is wrong. They're evil. They're closed-minded. They're intolerant. Whatever we want to throw out, they're wrong. We try to cancel them. But just because something is confronting or convicting doesn't mean that we should cancel it. And we live in a culture that hates conviction. We want nothing to do with conviction. The Pharisees didn't want to be convicted by Jesus, so they tried to cancel him. But don't try to cancel Jesus just because you feel convicted. Conviction's actually a gift, not guilt or shame. That's different. Jesus never, ever gives guilt or shame. The gospel message never preaches guilt or shame. The church, God's people, Christians are never supposed to preach and give out guilt or shame. And unfortunately, at times, we've been bad at that. That might be your experience. That someone who's a Christian or maybe a church just lashed on guilt onto you or shamed you for something that you did. Now, it takes no courage for me at all to stand up here and apologize for that because I didn't do that to you, but I just want you to know, I'm sorry that that's happened to you if that is. Christians are imperfect too. We need mercy and forgiveness and grace just like everybody else does. We're in progress just like everybody else does. But if you've ever experienced guilt or shame from a church, that doesn't come from Jesus. That doesn't come from the gospel. And that won't come from LifeBridge. Conviction, however, is something completely different. Conviction is actually a gift because it's an invitation to turn away from something, something that's leading to destruction or a dead end at the very least. It's an invitation to turn back to light and to life. Conviction is an invitation to turn away from something that will destroy and turn to Jesus where you can live life to the full. If you feel conviction, don't push against that. Don't fight against that. Actually lean into it because it's a gift. So Jesus hears all this arguing that's going on about what really happened. Was this guy blind for a certain reason? Did he really get healed? What's going on? He hears the Pharisees trying to discredit and cancel him yet again. So he speaks up. And his words are like thunder. He says this, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will abandon the sheep because they don't belong to him and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks and scatters the flock. The hired hand runs because he's working only for the money and doesn't really care about the sheep." And Jesus just calls out the posers. He says, hey, these Pharisees, these guys, these supposed leaders, they don't care about you. They don't. They're posers and they're cowards. All they care about is themselves. When the wolves come, they're going to take off because all they really care about is their money. They don't care about you. They say they're for you. They say they're with you. They say they got your back, but they're just going to abandon you. And when they abandon you, the wolves are going to tear you apart. Like, don't hold back, Jesus. He keeps going too. He says, I'm the good shepherd. I know my own sheep and they know me, just as my Father knows me and I know the Father. So I sacrifice my life for the sheep. I have other sheep too that are not in the sheepfold. I must bring them in also. They'll listen to my voice. There will be one flock with one shepherd. The Father loves me because I sacrifice my life so that I may take it back up again. No one can take my life from me. I love that. No one can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily. For I have the authority to lay it down when I want and to also take it up again. For this is why my Father has commanded me. I am the good shepherd. Well, that implies that there are bad ones. Jesus isn't just talking about this situation that he finds himself in. He's also dropping some truth that's applicable for right now. Here's what he's getting at. Every single one of us wants to be led. Like you and I want to be led. Everyone wants to be led. Even leaders want to be led. I'm a leader and I want to be led. The leader who does not want to be led, who bucks against authority, who thinks he or she is above that, that's a dangerous person. In fact, history is filled of examples of leaders who didn't want to be led, thought they were above it, didn't think they had to submit to any kind of authority at all, and it didn't turn out well for them. And it turned out even worse for the people that they left in their wake. But every single one of us wants to be led because all of us, we were all wired to be led by God. That's what we were created to be. We were created to be led by God. But our sinful world, this broken world because of our sin, has taken that wiring and we look to be led by other things or other people all the time. Something's good, something's terribly wrong. A good shepherd and then also hired hands. We want to be led. So my question is, who or what is leading you right now? I mean, it could be a person. It could be a concept or an ideology. It could be Jesus. Who or what is leading you? So Jesus is talking about leadership and he describes two different leaders. The good shepherd, which is him, and then the bad ones, hired hands. Well, what's the difference between the two? Hired hands are either people or they're even ideas or concepts that say they're for you, They say they got you back. They say they're caring for you. They say they're here to serve you. But when push comes to shove, they don't care about you at all. They're going to take off. They're posers, they're frauds, and usually they're master manipulators. They use people to get what they want. They'll use you to get what you want. Maybe it's, or what they want. Maybe it's money, like Jesus was talking about. That was pretty specific with the Pharisees. Or maybe it's recognition or status. Maybe it's power. Power is seductive. It's intoxicating. People love to be in power, love to be in power. But real leaders use that power to serve others, not themselves or their own agendas. Hired hands, that's all they're gonna do, is they're gonna use that power to serve their own agendas. When they see adversity, they run. They usually talk a big game. Hired hands talk a really big game. But when stuff's about to go down, when crisis comes, when the wolves start coming, they take off. Because all they care about is their own skin. And they abandoned the people that they said that they were here to lead. They abandoned the people that they say they were gonna serve. And the wolves tear them apart. And there's an example of this. If you've ever seen the movie Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner, I love Wyatt Earp's story. Now, we all know that Tombstone is the best version of that. In fact, Tombstone is the greatest Western movie. Look, more applause. This is awesome. Yes. Don't give me the John Wayne or Clint Eastwood stuff. Those guys are great. Tombstone takes the cake. Anyway, in Wyatt Earp, there's a scene before Wyatt Earp becomes a marshal, and there's this guy in a saloon, and he's drunk, and he's just spraying gunfire out into the street from the middle of the saloon, and everybody in town is taking cover. They're you know, covering their heads on the streets. They're hiding behind horse troughs, hiding around corners. They're scared because they're getting shot at, including the U.S. Marshal. He's there. He's got his gun out, but he's hiding around the corner like this. He's just hiding from the danger. And Wyatt Earp comes running around to the U.S. Marshal, and he says, "Marshal, like, aren't you going to do something? You're the marshal." And the marshal says, "No, they don't pay me enough. They don't pay me enough." So Wyatt grabs this guy's gun. He runs into the saloon, even though he's getting shot at, knocks the guy out, which is awesome, then drags him out of the saloon into the street by his ankle. The hired hand was useless. He was a coward. That's what Jesus is getting at. One guy was in it for what was right. The other guy was in it for what was the reward. That's the hired hand. But what about the good shepherd? What about Jesus? Four different times right there, four different times in those verses, he says that he voluntarily sacrifices his own life for his sheep. Jesus does not run from adversity. In fact, he will run into it. Not into it for a fight's sake, he runs into it for your sake because he cares about you that much. He lays down his life for you because you were created in his image. I'm a dad. I would, without question, without hesitation, I would lay down my life for my kids. Why? Because they're mine. Because I deeply love them. There's no way that I would act like a hired hand for my kids, and every single parent in here would do the exact same thing. Jesus is the exact same way with you. You are his son or his daughter. He loves you deeply. You have immense value to him where he lays down his life for you. And this is not just lip service either. Jesus authenticated everything that he says right here when he went to the cross. That's another great thing about Jesus. He doesn't just talk the game, but he lives it out. His actions back up every single thing that he says. And he says, "You matter to me this much. Everything about you matters to me this much. I want you." Later on, he says in John that he has 99 sheep, they're taken care of, but I got one that I'm missing. I'm gonna leave and I'm gonna go find that one. The 99 are okay, but that one sheep, it's that valuable. And you think about it, you're like, really? Is it one? Is that big of a deal? Come on, you got 99%, that's not bad. And Jesus says, no, that one is that important. It's just as important as the 99. I'm gonna go find that one because I love you that much. And if that's you today, if you're here this morning, if you're listening to this, this is not a coincidence. God has been pursuing you your entire life and he wants you and loves you. He wants all of you, baggage and all. Are you ready to respond? And if that's already you, if you're already a Christian, and Jesus uses this illustration of a sheepfold, what that means for you and I, it means we don't have to sit on a bench anymore. means we get to be in the game. We get to be on mission. From now on, it's not about us anymore. It's about everybody else. One of the biggest roadblocks to your personal growth, one of the greatest roadblocks to your personal discipleship, is if you believe the church is about you. One of the biggest roadblocks. I mean, if I believe that the church is about what I can consume instead of what I can contribute, I've capped my growth. If that's you, that's a sign of spiritual immaturity. I hear this all the time, and I say it myself, is that I want to grow deeper. I want to go deeper. I want to grow deeper. Absolutely. Amen. If you want to grow deeper, you got to get outside yourself. If you want to grow deeper, you've got to make it about everything in your life. You've got to make it about him and them. Him and them. Him is Jesus. Them is everyone else. How do I worship and glorify him? How do I become more like him? Well, the answer to those questions is, how can I serve them? How can I help them? How can I bless them? If you're doing that, you're being like him. If you're doing that, you're worshiping him. Those two things are connected together. That's how we grow. If we're about him and we're about them. So here's how this conversation, this discussion actually finishes up. It says this. When Jesus said these things, people were again divided in their opinions about him. Imagine that. Some said, he's demon-possessed and out of his mind. Why listen to a man like that? Others said, this doesn't sound like a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? They just can't get away from their opinions about Jesus. So what do you say? Is he a liar? Is he a lunatic? Is he Lord? Are you ready to shift from opinions to truth? Are you ready for your life to be about him and about them? Where are you at? Because that's the church that we want to be. That's the church that LifeBridge has been for 129 years. And God willing, for another 129 years, a church that's about him and them. We want to be a church that welcomes people where they can have a safe place to ask questions and wrestle with stuff in Scripture like I did in this particular passage for so long. Where they can be loved and encouraged, where they're not going to be given guilt or shame. They might experience conviction, that's a good thing, but we're not going to put on guilt or shame. Where people can be introduced to Jesus, and then all people can take their next step of growth, next step of discipleship. And the way we do that is if all of us, every single one of us individually, starting with me, is growing in our own personal relationship with Jesus first and our relationship with each other. We do that if we're about him and about them. We're about the good shepherd and about his sheep. Not ourselves. It's not about me anymore. Him and them. Father, thank you so much for not messing around with truth. You don't make any bones about it. You don't sugarcoat it. You don't make it unclear. Thank you for telling us and showing us that you are God, that you are the good shepherd, that you will lead us if we let you. Father, I pray that you would speak to people's hearts today, whether they're in this room right now or they're online, that you would touch people's hearts, that they would listen to your voice, that they would follow you, that they would give their lives to you and be led by you, because great things happen when we follow you. Let us be a church that follows your lead. We love you. It's in your precious name we pray.